The third plenary presentation at San Antonio was given by Dr. John Mackey on the so-called tandem trial, which compared anastrozole alone or with trastuzumab in patients with HER2-positive metastatic disease. I asked John to present a patient from his practice relevant to this issue, and he put forth to the group a 55-year-old woman who was diagnosed with an ER and HER2-positive tumor 5 years ago and received adjuvant AC followed by tamoxifen for 5 years. 1 year after completing the tamoxifen, the emergence of back pain led to the diagnosis of metastases.
She had a relatively moderate amount of pain. It was modest as she took non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and didn't require radiotherapy.
And what was her general condition? Was her weight stable? How did she feel?
She had no systemic symptoms. It was just persistent back pain that would sometimes bother her at night. It was surprising given the bone scan, actually.
And what was her lifestyle like? Was she working? What was she doing?
Yeah, she was an accountant, and she was very, very much a driven woman who was working very hard at the time in her practice and certainly wanted to keep doing so.
John, can you talk a little bit about the clinical research data that would be helpful in making this decision?
So, Chuck Vogel, to my left, has given us a very important signal from his trial of naked trastuzumab, where these women did not want to go ahead with first-line chemotherapy, but instead chose monotherapy with trastuzumab. Quite a respectable effect, 26% response rate, 3.8-month time to progression, and a 24-month overall survival median. Of course, the pivotal data is that from Dennis Slaman. In this case, we're looking at an anthracycline pretreated woman. She had 4 cycles of AC. So the appropriate data to show here is the combination of paclitaxel plus trastuzumab, 38% response, 7-month time to progression, 22 months overall survival. At the end of the day, we've got a number of trials that are showing pretty impressive results. And then we reach the tandem study. And this was an interesting trial. We recruited to this patient population because we do see that half of HER2-positive breast cancers have at least low-level ER positivity. And in this trial, 208 women from around the world were recruited. The control arm was just anastrozole monotherapy. The experimental arm added on trastuzumab standard dose and schedule, and time to progression was the primary endpoint. And by definition, the progression-free survival being the primary endpoint was positive, and the trial was therefore a positive trial. But interestingly, if you look, anastrozole monotherapy only gave a 2.4-month time to progression. And the addition of trastuzumab admittedly doubled that to 4.8 months, and it's highly statistically significant. Now, it translated into other outcomes, including a better response rate, also a better clinical benefit rate. And when we looked at the outcomes, in fact, overall survival was not statistically changed. Here we see, although there is a median difference of about 5 months, at the end of the day, this is not statistically significant. And I just want to reinforce that women on this trial were encouraged to cross over at the time of progression to a trastuzumab-based regimen. And fully 70% of women thus far have done so on the trial. However, the statisticians went digging. And we do have an unplanned subgroup analysis, so take this with whatever salt you have nearby. However, in a woman just such as the one we presented, without liver metastases, there is what appears to be a clinically meaningful improvement in overall survival. It's statistically significant, but again, this was a fishing expedition. So what did our patient actually do? She was an accountant, and this was 6 months ago, and I actually was forced to give her all of the primary research papers in PDF form on her USB pen. And then she faxed me back what she was wanting to do. And after reviewing all of the papers, she chose to take a combination of docetaxel and trastuzumab because she said that that was what clearly provided the biggest overall survival, and she would put up with the side effects of chemo once again for the confirmed survival benefit. And she's done well, and she's now on maintenance trastuzumab in a good partial response.
I want to get some input from the faculty about this question, because we've always had this concept, and again, it came out in a couple of the questions to John when he presented these data, about sort of a stepwise palliative approach to metastatic disease. Cliff, generally people who are ER positive, we start with hormones and keep going until we can't use them anymore. How would you have approached this patient, and did your mind change at all when you saw these tandem data?
Well, not so much. I mean, we've known for years that HER2-positive breast cancer is more rapidly progressive. And I think we should make the same decisions that we always make, which is to evaluate the patient globally for the appropriateness of hormone therapy. But frankly, when they're HER2-positive, if you start with a non-trastuzumab regimen, I think it's your obligation to watch these patients very carefully. What I mean is, imagine that we started the aromatase inhibitor and not even with trastuzumab, which I would say the data to some degree supports, but let's say you didn't. If she progresses in 8 weeks' time or 12 weeks' time and you feel compelled to then start chemotherapy, you have to ask yourself, have you actually lost anything? And the answer is probably not, and I'll cite data for that in a moment. On the other hand, if she's lucky enough to respond and you did give her the AI plus trastuzumab, there's about a 15-20% chance, it looks like, that she'll be on that for a long time with a very good quality of life, not to be poo-pooed, in my opinion. So CLGB years ago did a series of trials with what turned out to be an active phase 2 agents. And they gave them first line before they gave standard chemotherapy. In that case, it was CAF. There was no difference in survival for those people who got inactive drugs for a few weeks before they got active drugs. By extension, if this patient got NAI and it turned out to be inactive and she starts chemotherapy as given here 8 weeks, 12 weeks later because she progressed, there's very little or no risk that you've actually harmed her. And again, if she responds, you've improved her quality of life tremendously. I don't disagree with her choice to select chemotherapy. You have to respect that. But I don't think it's a mistake to continue to try and find the subset that respond to hormone therapy here.
John, one strategy that's used, I don't know that there's much research data on in the non-HER2-positive patient in metastatic setting, is to use chemotherapy followed by so-called endocrine maintenance. Now, this lady was put on chemotherapy and trastuzumab. Is she still on both?
No, in fact, she completed 8 cycles of trastuzumab and developed some peripheral neuropathy. And we felt at that point that the chemo was fine. She was in a good PR, and she's on maintenance of trastuzumab alone. There's no hormonal therapy that I've introduced at this point, and perhaps I can just explain why. I was trained in a center where clinical trials were the reason for getting up in the morning, and clinical trials in metastatic disease with chemotherapy have always mandated that you treat with chemotherapy, and only at the time of progression do you change treatment. And by introducing a maintenance hormone, you in fact lead to that patient to be censored in terms of outcomes on the trial. So we don't have good evidence that there's any real role for maintenance hormonal therapy, and we have lost so many patients on trials that we have run internationally because the physicians just aren't comfortable watching and waiting, that it's a bit of a problem that I have. I have difficulty in the absence of evidence changing therapy without interval progression.
Dabu, how have you approached patients with HER2-positive, ER-positive metastatic disease in the past, and has that changed now that you've seen the TANDEM data?
I think it's changed a little bit. I generally treat them with hormonal therapy if they have low burden disease and no symptoms. If they have more symptoms or higher burden, then I prefer to use trastuzumab-based therapy with chemotherapy or monotherapy. I guess I've moved the bar a little bit now because what this study has shown is probably that the average outcome is and sensitivity is worse than I would have imagined. I agree with Cliff. We've always known that it's probably less likelihood of response to hormonal therapy, but really a median of 2 months to progression was a little shorter than I would predict. So I still would attempt to treat with hormonal therapy unless the patient really felt that they were willing to take more side effects to enjoy a better chance of going longer without progression. But I think as long as you're watching a patient closely, you could probably do that.
Chuck, what about this situation and the patient's thought that there's a survival benefit to chemo and trastuzumab and her choice to do that? Do you think that's sort of a rational thought? I know you consider yourself an avid hormonalist. Would you have started a patient like this on hormones or something else?
No, I would have probably started the patient on hormones. I think that the results of the TANDEM trial were modest in terms of the added benefit. And, you know, I agree that we've all known for some time from Alan Lipman's data and other data that patients who are HER2 positive don't do quite as well with hormonal therapy alone. Steve Jones and I have agreed not to agree for a long time on this particular issue. And I don't think that the TANDEM trial has changed my view that much. But, you know, we're sensitized. We've been sensitized all along that if you're going to try hormonal therapy in the HER2-positive patient, watch them real carefully.